We'll call the next case, which is Baker versus Blue Valley Unified School District 229 and other defendants, other defendant appellees, number 20-3054. Counsel, you may proceed. Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Your Honor. I represent Terry Baker and her son, SFB, Silo, the pseudonym. The last name Baker is not a coincidence. The lower court said that we had no standing and dismissed the case. There are two statutes at play. KSA 72-62-62, which is the compulsory school enrollment and its vaccine requirement. The other statute is KSA 65-508, and that has to do with licensed daycare and youth programs, summer camps, etc., and the qualifications for that, which all require a child to be vaccine compliant or that depending on whether the daycare is in the school or somewhere else, that either the parent or the student is an adherent of a religious denomination of a certain theology. The district court said that the fact that Silo was attending the preschool defeated standing under the school enrollment 6262. As to 65508, the lower court said, you have to try to get him enrolled in a licensed daycare or other youth program and then be denied. So you have to subject yourself to it and come back with some sort of denial. Now, we raise an equal protection claim. Well, let me start off with this. Silo is no longer in a preschool, so he's had to change schools into kindergarten. So the fact that he attended school in a preschool and now we're into the kindergarten phase is a different scenario. Every year a parent has to say under 72-62-62 that, and it says in each school year, the parent has to say child is vaccine compliant, some certification from a doctor, or make the statement that the child is the adherent. Now, so we raised equal protection claim.
You raised that for the first time on appeal, correct? You didn't make an equal protection. I'm sorry. Did you make an equal protection argument in the district court?
Yes. We raised an equal protection claim. We said we had standing under equal protection. We specifically briefed that so that it was in the petition, and we said we had standing under the equal protection claim. So let's just take first the 65-508. There is a barrier to Silo obtaining any of those public benefits, daycare, licensed daycare, youth programs. He does not qualify. Terry does not qualify. And there is the barrier. So this court, it's like the voting cases, citizenship voting cases that the court has just recently decided, which said that, look, when you have a regimen, a statute that requires some photo ID or proof of citizenship, the voter doesn't have to actually have to go try to vote or even attempt to comply. Standing is conveyed by virtue of the regimen itself. This is what the court ruled in Fish v. Kobach and then recently in Fish v. Schwab. And then they cited the general contractors, City of Jacksonville, a Supreme Court case, which said injury in fact in an equal protection case is the denial of equal treatment resulting from the imposition of the barrier, not the ultimate inability to obtain the benefit. So, but yet the district court said that we had to come back and say we were actually denied the benefit. So, and it does not, now we have to, he has to enter into a kindergarten school. We are disqualified from getting either homeschooling.
Well, counsel, let me just ask you, first of all, on the standing question, I'd like to get to the specific argument you're making in just a second, but as a threshold question, do you read the district court decision as dismissing the case on standing based on the face of the complaint, or do you think it also relied on the Schmidt and Goss declarations?
Well, she said that she said in a footnote, footnote 6 of page 5, she said that his opinion was irrelevant. So she just said it didn't matter. She simply said the fact that he's going to school is dispositive, and that the fact that we hadn't applied or tried to apply in a licensed daycare, that was dispositive, and that was the end of the story. So I think she erred in that because whether
I'm not asking about error or not error. I'm just asking whether the complaint was dismissed on for lack of standing based on a facial attack on the complaint as opposed to a factual attack on the complaint. I'm just trying to figure out what category this decision fits into.
I think it's a combination of both, because she, on the one hand, she said that she wasn't going to rely on Mark Schmidt for the 72-62-62 school. That's irrelevant. But then she went into a factual determination that there was no allegation that we had tried to get the youth program or any of those other services. Now, maybe she got that from the face of the complaint as well.
All right. Well, that actually leads me into to the next question I wanted to ask you about. And it has to do with your argument under the, not the 6262, but the 508 provision. Why isn't that one of these someday intention arguments? There's this interest in private school or homeschooling, but the Supreme Court said in Lujan that without some description of a plan, some when that day will come, you just don't have support for an actual or imminent injury. You know, you had the affiance in that case. It was an endangered species, that case, and they wanted to go back to the Nile, and they wanted to go back to places and watch and observe, but they hadn't bought an airplane ticket, and so they intended to go out and enjoy endangered species wildlife, but they hadn't made any plans to. And so why is this case different? It's an expression of interest, but where in the record does it show that anything's been done?
No, well, it's not. Terry expressed more than an interest. She said that she was contemplating, wanted the option to send him to daycare. But you cannot plan on sending him to daycare when you're already disqualified. So we set that out in the reply that, look, she said she wants to homeschool, consider that, and particularly now, she wants to have the option of sending him licensed daycare and youth programs. I don't know how you would say in a petition that I plan on doing something that I'm already disqualified from.
Isn't there also an exemption provision in the 508 statute, just as there is in the 6262?
No, there is, but here's how that works. So 65508 says it's the parent that must be the religious adherent. 6262 says it must be the student who is the inherent. So even under that, the school enrollment in Kansas, Kansas does not regard any of the parents' religious beliefs. It's a non-factor. She cannot raise the child according to her religious beliefs. It only matters what the student. And of course, the equal protection part of that problem is, even as between students, Silo is 5 or 4 or 3. You can't even be a religious adherent or an adherent to a religious denomination. So only older students can attain to that status. So even if, I mean, what am I supposed to do? Interview Silo today? Hey, Silo, how do you feel about vaccinations? Do you have a religious belief? It's an absurdity. So it's an impossibility. So he will never qualify for that. So that it is the barrier right there that we can't do it. And then as to the exemption for daycare and all of that, Terry doesn't qualify. She is simply, you're not going to plan to do something that you're not qualified for. She'd like to homeschool. She doesn't qualify for that. The same vaccine requirements are required there as it is here. Can we get private schooling? No, we're disqualified. And right now we're talking to the school about his IEP. We made an IEP IDEA claim in the petition. And so this idea that kids are going to have to wear masks and, you know, good luck herding cats on that. And he needs to see lips. He has a hearing issue and needs to see lips. So it's, we're talking about the IEP that probably won't even work, but we've not entered into the school. We're not doing anything with the school at this point. We would like to try to do something else, but we can't do it. And it's that barrier that we're asking the court to declare, allow us to have standing this school year that she wants to have these services. We can't get them. I don't know how else to say it in a petition, but we're back in the parenting business and we'd like licensed daycare. We would like to have them in a youth program. We can't get there.
Well, you say you can't get there, but you haven't been denied an opportunity to get there, right? You just have assumed that it would be denied.
I'm not assuming. The statute itself says you have to be an adherent of a religious denomination. Terry is not. Silo is not. So I don't need to, we don't need to speculate.
I guess it's how it depends on how you define adherent.
Terry gets to define what she is. The court, neither the state, are an expert on what it is to be an adherent. She says, and I think you have to accept it, she says she's not.
And well, why do we have to accept her position that the state would deem her not to be an adherent when we have reason to believe, based on the fact that that Silo is attending school without objection, that it wouldn't be interpreted that way?
Well, that was last year. Now this is a new year. But to say that you have a facial statute that says you have to say, you have to write, give a written statement that the parent is an adherent of a certain kind of religious denomination. Terry,
well, Mr. Baker, you keep referring to this year. Aren't we limited in our review to what the district court decided?
Well, the live controversy is still ongoing.
Well, but isn't our task reviewing whether the district court got it right or wrong when the district court decided?
Well, that is true. And I believe she erred in the fact that she said that we have to apply to get licensed daycare, or that this idea that he's attending school on a temporary basis. I mean, even the Mark Schmidt affidavit said the school only had a current intention. There was no promise. And the state is defending these statutes. These are not moribund, obsolete statutes, or a statute that's been declared unconstitutional, such as in Winsness or the DSL case. which is a kind of a prosecutorial discretion case. This isn't a prosecutorial discretion case. The school district has to follow the statute, and the regulations are out there. They are alive and they are vibrant and they're being enforced every day, and they're being enforced today in the real world of Terry and Silo. We just cannot get those services because there is the barrier. And we think that is enough to convey standing. Just as a voter has standing, she doesn't have to go try to vote. It's that regimen that conveys standing. I see my time's up.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. We'll now hear from appellee counsel. Who's going first?
I am, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Stephanie Lovett Bowman. I represent Blue Valley Unified School District 229 in this case. Mr. Art Chalmers is also with us today, Assistant Attorney General for the state of Kansas, and he will be speaking on behalf of the state defendants. I'm going to try to reserve about 5 minutes for Mr. Chalmers to address the court as well. Your Honors, the district court properly dismissed this case for lack of jurisdiction because Ms. Baker does not have standing. Ms. Baker doesn't have standing for two relatively simple and interrelated reasons. Ms. Baker's son, Silo, was enrolled at Blue Valley Schools for his second school year, and he was unvaccinated at the time that Ms. Baker filed this lawsuit. Ms. Baker's concern that someday Blue Valley might change its mind and decide to revoke its acceptance of her religious objection statement to vaccinations on Silo's behalf, that concern is entirely based on her own speculation. There is no concrete injury articulated in the complaint for this case, and there's certainly no impending injury because Blue Valley has never threatened to revoke its acceptance of that religious objection statement. There's been no change in law that would suggest that Blue Valley might revisit that decision. Second, and related to the first point, Ms. Baker doesn't need any relief from this court. She doesn't require redress. She would like Silo, her son, to attend Blue Valley Schools, and indeed, he is attending Blue Valley Schools. She would like him to be unvaccinated. He remains unvaccinated. And she believes that Blue Valley is required to accept her religious objection statement as written, and it was accepted. Nothing has happened from Blue Valley's perspective to change anything, and there is nothing for this court to fix between these parties, Blue Valley and Ms. Baker. This lawsuit that Ms. Baker has filed will not leave her any better off. She simply doesn't need relief from this court. Ms. Baker's complaint, as it relates to Blue Valley, is essentially that the mere existence of KSA 726262 poses a threat against her that Blue Valley might, or in her mind, should change its mind and revoke acceptance of a religious objection statement that it has had in place for two school years at the time this complaint was filed. The plaintiff here, Ms. Baker, is the one bearing the burden to establish that she has standing to sue Blue Valley, and she hasn't done that. The standing question is not, as she has suggested in briefing, whether Blue Valley should have in some way harmed her or Silo by rejecting the religious objection statement that she submitted. That turns the standing inquiry on its head, as the district court properly noted. The question is whether in the real world, Blue Valley in fact has harmed Ms. Baker or is threatening in some way to harm Ms. Baker by rejecting the religious objection statement that was already made. The declaration that Mr. Baker mentioned from a senior administrator overseeing the health services department from Blue Valley was submitted as part of our motion to dismiss briefing. And all that declaration says is that nothing has changed from Blue Valley's perspective. The district accepted the religious objection statement that it received, Silo's enrolled, and it has Nothing has changed. There is no expectation that Blue Valley's position will change.
Counsel, based on the district court's dismissal order, do we need to consider the declaration, the Schmidt declaration, in reviewing the standing decision?
Your Honor, I would say no, because the Schmidt declaration doesn't add anything other than disputing Ms. Baker's suggestion that came out of nowhere that Blue Valley is likely to change its mind. The complaint itself provides essentially what the district court, I believe, relied on, which is the basic fact that Silo is enrolled and Blue Valley has accepted the religious objection statement. And so whatever disagreement Ms. Baker may have with the law as written, she hasn't been harmed by that law, at least by Blue Valley or by Blue Valley's policies.
Why did the district court grant an exemption when the Bakers didn't say that SFB is an adherent of a religious denomination, as the statute provides, the 6262 statute provides?
Your Honor, the statute doesn't require any sort of magic words be stated by the parent when seeking a religious exemption.
Well, it does lay out a standard, doesn't it?
It lays out a standard, Your Honor, but as I said, no magic words. So the standard is, as Mr. Baker has already mentioned, that an adherent to a religious denomination whose religious teachings are opposed to vaccinations. But there's no requirement that the school require a specific recitation of those words. And in this situation...
Well, no, I understand that, but the statute says the child is an adherent of a religious denomination, and the declaration, or the request or the objection didn't address that at all, didn't make any claim about that.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. The actual letter submitted by the Bakers for Silo's behalf said, in response to your inquiry about immunization and an immunization exemption for Silo, you directed us to write a letter stating it is against our religion. Terry and I make that statement in this letter. Blue Valley
didn't say anything about the child.
Your Honor, it does not. As I read the letter, it's stating an objection based on the family's belief system. But regardless, even if Mr. Baker were correct as an academic matter that Blue Valley had some has misinterpreted the way that it should apply KSA 726262, it doesn't matter, because the Blue Valley has accepted the statement provided. Mr. Baker's or the Baker's theory here is actually one that bears some noting, because their entire theory here is that Blue Valley should have rejected this religious objection statement, and therefore, in their theory of the case, in doing that would have violated Silo's constitutional rights and Ms. Baker's constitutional rights, which is a theory that is hard, difficult to understand even at the outset. But the reality is the school district accepted this statement. And so it becomes very academic to parse the statute as it relates to my client Blue Valley, because Blue Valley has not harmed Ms. Baker's son, and he already has all the relief that he could want because he's enrolled in Blue Valley schools. The complaint doesn't include, by the way, any allegation that Ms. Baker hesitated to submit this statement to Blue Valley, that she was concerned by existence of the statute that it would be rejected. There's no allegation like that. There is no allegation that Blue Valley dictated or coerced the way that her statement was provided. The allegations are very simple. She submitted the statement, it was accepted, and Silo has gone to school, and Silo remains in school. I'd like to briefly address a point that Mr. Baker brought up that I believe the court has already noted is not relevant to the standing question, but since he brought it up, Mr. Baker has suggested that the school will consider things differently now that Silo is a kindergartner, and that's not accurate. Under 726262, once a religious objection statement is submitted, then it is submitted, and there's no annual resubmission requirement. As I mentioned previously, the mere sort of abstract existence of KSA 7262 doesn't really affect this case at all, because Ms. Baker has not been harmed by that statute or Blue Valley's policy implementing that statute. I can see that I'm getting very close to the 5 minutes I promised Mr. Chalmers. So if the court doesn't have any further questions, I would ask in closing that the court affirm the district court's ruling dismissing this case because Ms. Baker lacks standing, and I will yield the remainder of our defendant's time to Mr. Chalmers. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Arthur Chalmers. I represent what have been described as the state defendants. To answer one of the questions that Judge Matheson's asked, I think this is a case that is decided on the pleadings. I think the question is whether or not there is the facts alleged, not the conclusions. The facts alleged develop a plausible claim for standing. I don't think they do. I would agree with and its counsel that's already provided her position on that. It justifies that, but I would emphasize that in the amended complaint, that I was able to find, at paragraphs 34 and paragraphs 175, the allegations that Terry, and that's how they refer to Ms. Baker, would like the option of enrolling her son, and now we're talking about an unaccredited private school, and that Terry would like to utilize a school-age program or daycare or childcare facility for the son. That doesn't get you to the imminent injury that I think needs to be alleged when you're requesting prospective declaratory injunctive relief.
Mr. Chalmers, could you address the argument Mr. Baker was presenting this morning about an equal protection barrier of access to these programs?
I'll try. I've understood the equal protection argument to be what I think Judge Timokanovich described as an equal footing doctrine. And in the Schultz case, that's the case that was cited in 2005. And it's talking about where the injury itself goes to the barrier that's being put in place. I acknowledge that equal protection, and when you look at standing, it's a different analysis depending on what the constitutional injury that's being claimed. But you still have to have that imminence of injury. And I think the Schultz case does a pretty good job of describing that. That's the case where there was an individual that was an avid hunter. He was seeking a permit, and there were three different requirements for permits. Two of them they found standing. The third, where he said, look, I would like to have the ability to go out and hunt for, I think it was elk, without having to have a guide. And he was making an equal protection claim saying, look, only non-residents have to have a guide, the residents don't have to. And what the court in that case said is that, and I think I can kind of quote it here, he alleges he would like to hunt in the wilderness areas in the future without a guide, but at this time he's filed for summary judgment. He has not yet applied for a 2003 deer or elk licenses and established the guide statute, in fact, limited his hunting's option. Standing is not conferred by conjecture or speculation about. I think we're still back into the someday intent, Your Honor. Someday, Ms. Baker might take the position, I want to send my son to these daycare programs or something else. But that is not an imminent injury that Justice Scalia was talking about when he says a real and imminent threat to being injured in the future. I don't think that crosses the standing threshold. Frankly, my bigger concern in this case, and at risk of being presumptuous, is that the court would send it back to the district court saying, yeah, Judge Teeter got it right, but I'm going to remand to allow the opportunity to try to amend, to fill in some of the facts that weren't contained in the complaint. And there's some reasons why that doesn't make sense here, I think. That's what you would do in a pro se case. I'm not sure that I found cases where that really applies in a non-pro se. But here, even the facts that had been described by counsel don't cure his problem. It still is a someday sort of thing. Well, if she can't do this, if the child can't get into daycare or can't get into school, then we might do this. We still don't have that imminence of an injury. But secondly, there's been no request to be made to amend the complaint. In fact, in this case, there was an amended complaint filed after the motion to dismiss where the issues of standings were raised. And then there's an initial feature that maybe cuts against trying to remand back. And that is, this is not the first case that Mr. Baker brought in federal court. There was another case that had been pending. That case had been stayed in part and in part dismissed under abstention. After the briefing in this case is concluded, Mr. Baker was given relief from that order, filed an amended complaint. When a motion was dismissed alleging lack of standing, he voluntarily dismissed his case. And then on June 29, 2020, filed a lawsuit in state court, Shawnee County District Court, that's 2020 CD 354, in which he alleges the very sort of claims here under the state court action. In other words, this is not a case where I think we send it back for judicial convenience or economy to give him a chance to cure.
He's right. Counsel, you're over time. I think that we understand your argument, and time has expired. So we will thank counsel for the arguments this morning, consider the case submitted, and counsel are excused. Thank you.
Thank you.